Thank you very much, and indeed it is a pleasure for us to be here this morning and to speak to you for a few minutes on the subject of spiritual and physical fitness. In fact, this morning I want to talk about the interrelationship between spiritual and physical fitness. Years ago, it was said that nations have passed away and left no traces, and history gives a cause of it. One single simple reason in all cases they fell because their people were not fit. Fitness, what do we mean? There's physical fitness, there's academic fitness, there's moral fitness, there's spiritual fitness. Without question, spiritual fitness is the most important type. This morning, for a few minutes, though, I want to talk about physical fitness. And just exactly what do we mean by being physically fit? Does it mean absence of disease? Does it mean a lovely figure or big muscles? What really does physical fitness mean? The type of physical fitness that I mean is being physically fit for life, having adequate cardiovascular pulmonary fitness. But you know, in this country, the concept of fitness is after the fact. We have very little in the concept of preventive medicine. And what are we seeing in this country as a result of that? Let's look, for example, at the cost of medical care back in 1950. It was only $12 billion. By 1970, the cost of medical care had risen to $70 billion. In 1975, it had risen to $118 billion. 97% of those monies have gone for the treatment of disease, only 3% for the prevention of disease. As a result of this, what do we see? We see close to 2 million heart attacks occurring every year in this country. We see an increasing incidence of heart disease at least up until 1968. We see basically a sick population. Recently, the American Health Foundation made this statement that ours is a legacy of a medical system providing too much care too late. Now think about that. A legacy of a medical system providing too much care too late. Why? Read the current newspapers and magazines and articles. I quote from December the 1st, 1975 in the New York Times. An article written by Ashley Montague entitled Rehumanizing Medicine. And in this he says, the health of the people should surely be our number one priority, yet we show little interest in this. Preventive medicine, after years of struggle to stay alive, remains the Cinderella of the medical specialties. That's true, but why? Mr. Montague goes on to point out there's two reasons. The first reason is us, you as patients. Too many of us will not see a doctor when we are well for fear that something may be discovered that is wrong with us. Two, most people come to regard health as something one goes to the doctor to be restored to when one is sick. Hence, health becomes a function of disease, and one sees a doctor only when one is sick. He says the other reason is the attitude of physicians. Doctors on the whole are uninterested in health, since their training is focused virtually entirely on disease. Listen carefully. And there is very little profit in health. You know, as Millie and I travel around the world and have the chance to visit foreign countries, we're appalled at what they're doing in foreign countries. It's discouraging to me to see emphasis on physical education deteriorating rapidly in this country. I've been asked to testify before state legislatures to encourage legislatures to allow physical education programs to continue in school systems. And yet we noticed in traveling in the Far East a couple of years ago, a big picture in an Australian newspaper of 110,000 Chinese youth assembled in Peking, being tested physically. And Chairman Mao was observing their physical fitness test. And he said, Chairman Mao encourages the youth of China to get fit, to keep fit, and to spur on the revolution. Last summer we were in Russia. We had a chance to visit with some of the top people in physical education and fitness in Russia. And we were told by Anatoly Kisilov, the vice president of the Soviet Sports Committee, that we have 80 million Russians involved in competitive sports programs. And what do we do in this country? What do we do in this country in the way of physical fitness? Very, very little. Look at the statistics on our children. Look at the statistics on our adults. And what happens as a result of our lack of an interest in preventive medicine? Listen carefully and you'll hear. A lot of us here today are in the age category 35 to 44. Men, listen to the five most common causes of death in this country between the ages of 35 and 54. Number one is heart attacks. Number two is lung cancer. Number 3, auto accidents. Number 4, cirrhosis of the liver. Number 5, strokes. All right, just think of those for just a minute. In reverse, what's the most common cause of strokes? High blood pressure. What's the most common cause of high blood pressure, as the physicians know here this morning? Obesity. If you lose weight, in majority of cases, your blood pressure goes down. It was estimated in 1975 that there were at least 50 million Americans over a total of 1 billion pounds overweight. Disgusting, isn't it? What about cirrhosis of the liver? What's the most common cause of cirrhosis of the liver? It's drinking. In 1975, we consumed 621 million gallons of wine and distilled spirits and 49 billion 12-ounce bottles of beer. What about that number 3, auto accidents? What's the best way to reduce deaths from auto accidents? Use those seat belts and shoulder harnesses that are mandatory in your car. But yet in 1975, only 25% of Americans use their seat belts, and only 4% use their shoulder harnesses. What's the most common cause of lung cancer? It's estimated that 88% of the people who die of lung cancer have a history of cigarette smoking. 70,000 of the 80,000 people that died in 1975 from lung cancer had a history of cigarette smoking. And yet in 1975, 8.7 billion cigars were smoking. 600 billion cigarettes were smoking in 1975. This keeps going on and on, doesn't it? What's the most common cause of heart disease? I'm talking about proper weight, proper diet, proper exercise, avoiding tobacco. Look at tobacco alone. It's estimated if you smoke over 20 cigarettes per day, you're 3 times as likely to die of a heart attack as is the non-smoker, the pipe smoker, the cigar smoker, listen carefully, or the former cigarette smoker. If you stop smoking cigarettes in as short a period of time as 6 weeks, you can get back into a low-risk category. I challenge you with the verse, 1 Corinthians 6:20. For ye are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Can you honestly say that you're glorifying God in your body and in your spirit, when the 5 most common causes of death for men in this country are in large preventable? I've heard the statement made that heart disease before 65 is an act of man, heart disease after 65 is an act of God, and I think there may be some truth to that. But we are beginning to see a change in interest, and I'm delighted as I travel around the country, around the world, giving series of presentations, to see that there is an interest in improving man's health. One thing we've concentrated on over the years has been the subject of exercise as a means of improving health, as a means of practicing preventive medicine. But a problem that we've had over the years is quantifying just what we mean by physical fitness. We've developed techniques to stress individuals and to determine their level of fitness. The treadmill stress test is now being used throughout the country, throughout the world. You can stress someone to exhaustion on the treadmill. If we can turn the lights down now, please. You can stress someone to exhaustion and determine, number 1, his likelihood of having heart disease by the results of the stress test. Number 2, you can determine his level of fitness by the duration he walks on the treadmill. And using a technique of this type, which is called the bulky technique with a standard speed of 17.5 minutes per mile, you increase the incline 1% per minute until the person goes a max of 25 minutes or longer. And based on his time on the treadmill, he's classified into 1 of 5 fitness categories: very poor, poor, fair, good, and excellent. For example, a man under 30 years of age must go 18 minutes to be good. If he's 30 to 39, 17 minutes, 16 minutes if he's older than that. Age-adjusted, 50 to 59, 60 plus. Sex-adjusted, too. So what I'm saying is we can quantify physical fitness. And we are quantifying physical fitness. And we're correlating it with the way the body responds to conditioning and training. For example, if you look at the 10 leading causes of death from heart disease, as listed by the American Heart Association, this is what you'll see. Number 1 is family history. It was once said, if you want to prevent heart disease, you've got to select the proper parents. And I think there may be some truth to that. But if you have a family member who had a heart attack less than 50 years of age, you're more likely to have a heart attack. Number 2, stress, personality behavior patterns, stress in your heart. Type A behavior in your heart. It plays a role in heart disease, but it's not the only role. And the peace and tranquility that goes with being a Christian is one of the best ways to overcome the stress in your life. We encourage our people to exercise at the end of the day, to burn up the stress of the day. Stress can be controlled. It's not stress that kills, it's the way you handle the stress in your life that kills. Number three, inactivity. Number four, blood pressure above 140 over 90. Number five, abnormal resting ECGs. Number six, obesity. Number seven, cigarette smoking. Number eight, cholesterol. Number nine, triglycerides. And number 10, glucose. We've had the opportunity at our facility in Dallas over the past 5 years to evaluate over 10,000 patients. And we have found in 3,000 of those patients some interesting relationships. Let's look at glucose, since that's a risk factor. I just got through telling you that. And if you classify these people, these 2,539 men, into five fitness categories and look at their fasting blood sugars, and you find 112, 107, 105, 104, and 102. Perfectly related, isn't it? We feel this relationship between adult onset diabetes and inactivity and obesity. You can see that perfect statistically significant relationship in blood sugar. You can see the same thing with cholesterol, which is one of the most important coronary risk factors. And you see in almost 3,000 men, blood cholesterol levels of 237, 238, 228, 222, 217. Only one of them is out of line. And when you compare those with the excellent, they're all significant except for the one in the good category. But there's more than cholesterol behind heart disease. Lipids, fats in the bloodstream are causative agents as far as heart disease is concerned. And one of those lipids is triglycerides. You may be doing everything right as far as your diet is concerned. The cholesterol, the eggs, the dairy products. Not like we had this breakfast this morning, though. But if you're doing everything right and then you're compensating by increasing the intake of carbohydrates and starches in the diet, your cholesterol may go down and your triglycerides go up. And young ladies, triglycerides may be the most important cause of heart disease in you. And you find this a remarkable relationship. 179, 172, 140, 114, and 87. I've already shown you three of the coronary risk factors that are perfectly related to your level of fitness. But yet the critics in the field say we just don't have enough data yet to show the role that activity plays in preventing heart disease. Let's take another risk factor. Let's look at weight. And you find the same relationship, 196 pounds, 189, 182, 174, and 167. But as I tell my audiences, there's more behind weight than what meets the eye. People come to us all the time in Dallas, monstrously overweight. Well, Doc, I'm not really overweight. I've got big bones. My frame can carry more weight than I'm allowed by those metropolitan standards. Oh, I've heard that excuse so many times that we finally, a few years ago, developed a technique to answer that question. And this is called a total body volumeter. Now, that's what I call it. The patients call it something else. But what it is a 7-foot vertical tank of water. You stand on that little elevator up at the top, and you're lowered down into the water, until the water's at chin level. Then we ask you to take a deep breath in, let it all out, go underwater. And by the amount of water you displace, we determine your volume. Knowing your volume and your weight, what do we determine? Specific gravity. We're trying to find out whether you sink or whether you float. If you're fat, you float. If you're lean, you sink. But more specifically, we can tell you exactly what percent of your body is fat and what percent is lean. If you're a man, you must be less than 19% body fat. If you're a woman, less than 22% body fat. If you're an athlete, less than 15% body fat. I run 16% body fat. Roger Staubach, quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, 196 pounds, 12% body fat. Frank Shorter, who won the Olympic marathon in 1972, 4% body fat. We had a world-class runner to come through our research institute not long ago, and he was 1.14% body fat. Have you ever seen a walking skeleton? No, it wasn't that at all. He was lean. All right, how would you like to be going through an evaluation where you're having that thing that you had to go through? Well, needless to say, it can be somewhat apprehensive to patients who can't swim. But I can assure you, no one's drowned yet, and we can dump the water out in about 8 seconds. The other problem is one of claustrophobia, because that tank is not very large. It's like a Coke bottle, you know, small at the top and big at the bottom. So we always have our technicians to brief the patient. Number one, can you swim? And number two, do you suffer from claustrophobia? The vast majority of patients say, no problem. I recall two problems, however. Number one occurred in a 300-pound man. Now, we had to squeeze him in to get him into the tank. We had to grease him up to get him in. He was fat. We lowered him into the tank, the water at chin level. We made all of our measurements, flipped the switch to bring him back out, and would you believe it? The cable supporting the elevator broke. And we had a nude, 300-pound, slimy man stuck in the bottom of that tank. Now, you have to understand that this is a dilemma because there was no steps, there was no ladder, there was no rope, there was no way of getting him out of the tank. I could just see all sorts of problems, malpractice and all this kind of stuff, you know, coming out of that tank. But after about 45 minutes, we were successful in getting this man out of the tank. Now, I might add that we now have a winch up in the ceiling, so if that happens again, we can crank him out of the tank. Case number two was a man who said, I suffer from claustrophobia, but I'd sure like to know my ideal weight. I said, fine, I'll measure you myself. Took him out, we put him on that elevator, lowered him down, water at chin level, no humanly possible way of getting out. And I heard this voice coming out of the bottom of that tank, just about like this. Dr. Cooper, I want out. I said, fine, I flipped the switch to bring him out. But he was already out. That is humanly impossible. One of the technicians standing nearby said he looked like a Polaris missile being blasted out of a submarine as it came out of that water. The only two problems, yes, we've had in some 10,000 patients, and as a result of this, we have been able to show a remarkable relationship between your level of fitness and your percent body fat. Yes, a few of you out here today do have big bones, but the majority of you who look in the mirror and aren't really proud of what you see may be overweight. I was discussing this concept last week in a religious seminar, and we've noticed so many people that have gone from the physical and then have become interested in the spiritual. I asked my audience, why do you think that a man becomes introspective? He looks at the deficiencies in his life. He's overweight. He's inactive. He's smoking too much. He's drinking too much. He starts changing these things. And before long, his interests may increase in spiritual activities. And one of the men in the audience says, I've lost 90 pounds since I was about 20 years of age. And I've got my weight down. But you know, I can say that when I weighed 260 pounds, that I couldn't obey what it says in the Bible when it says to love thy neighbor as thyself. I didn't love myself. Do you really believe that if a person loves himself, that he can let himself become grossly obese? He can smoke excessively, he can drink, he can do all of these things. Does he really love himself? I think that may be one of the reasons behind that. You know, we can show blood pressure relationships are perfectly related to fitness. 132, 126, 124, 122, 122, and show the, exactly the same thing with diastolic pressures, 86, 83, 83, 80, 79. So what I've shown you in the past few minutes is that 5 of the 10 risk factors listed by the American Heart Association are almost perfectly related to your level of fitness. Your blood pressure, your obesity, your cholesterol, your triglycerides, and your glucose. And I defy anyone out here to say that for such thing as a coronary risk factor, if you agree to that, you have to accept the fact that exercise has the potential of doing you an awful lot of good. Very briefly, now I've talked about the physical aspect of this. I want to conclude this morning by talking about the spiritual aspect, because certainly the Lord has been the most important thing in my life. I didn't realize that as a young man growing up, having accepted Christ as a young man. At 18 years of age, I felt though I was being called into the foreign medical mission field. And I can recall at that particular age going down, committing my life to Christ. But then as I went through pre-med and medical school at the University of Oklahoma, I no longer had that feeling, that call of going into full-time religious work. I didn't know what the Lord had for me in my life. In fact, I wasn't that active during those years, those educational years. And this continued when I left medical school days. Kind of a passive Christian, just could hardly be called an interested Christian. And I kind of muddled along there for a few years. But then in 1968, we published the first book. I ask you this question, why was it that that book in 1968 became a bestseller even though 200 books were published on physical fitness that year. It's kind of strange, isn't it? In 1970, I left the service after 13 years, and I really wasn't quite sure that's what I should be doing. But yet I felt that command, that necessity, that desire to leave the service. Went to Dallas, Texas from San Antonio. I had these ambitions and these dreams and these desires and no earthly way of seeing them come to reality. For example, the facility that we were going to purchase required at least $1 million to be able to acquire this facility and get started. I can recall going to a bank, and they said, well, Dr. Cooper, you've been in the service all these years. You don't have much in the way of equity. We can loan you about $75,000. In the now of a clear blue sky, almost, comes the Tyler Corporation, a man by the name of Joe McKinney, who says, here's a blank check. You can get what you need. You can pay us back when you can. Kind of eerie, isn't it? Step number one. Step number two. I'm just kind of wondering what's going on. But we select this beautiful spot in North Dallas. But it's 22 acres in size. And the woman who owns the property, a lovely widow, says, no, I will never break up that land for anybody. Well, I can't spend $1 million just for land. We need that money to make improvements, to build our facility, our clinic, our health club, our activity center. I will never break it up. I asked my realtor, I said, let's try. I want you to offer this woman for 8.6 acres the same price per square foot that she's asking for the total amount. Even though on that 8.6 acres are all of the improvements, and there's nothing but bare land on the remaining 14 acres. He laughed. He said, Dr. Cooper, that's crazy. That woman would lose lots of money if she did that. She's not about to sell you the best part of her land at the same price per square foot she's asking for the total amount. But you know, something was driving me to go ahead and to check that out. And so he asked her, and he nearly collapsed when she said, No, I would never do that. But then she stopped. And she said, what did you say that man's name was who's trying to buy this land? And he said, Dr. Kenneth Cooper. Oh, is he the man that wrote the book on exercise? Yes, he is. And just like that, she said, for him, I'll do it. Nobody else in the world would she do it. Why? I didn't find out until a few weeks later when this lovely woman, Mrs. Nichols was her name, and she had attended the Layman's Leadership Institute, where Millie and I were giving our testimony about 6 weeks before. And she had made a commitment that day that if she could ever help us, she would. Kind of eerie, isn't it? You know, if you turn loose and let God have control, it's amazing what can happen. The city planner of Dallas said, you've picked the worst piece of land in Dallas to do what you want to do. That land's been up for zoning for 10 years. It's been turned down 14 times. Shucks, the people across the street even have an attorney they retain just to fight the zoning of that property. That's residential land. It's going to stay that way. I said, can we try? And he said, yes, but you'll waste your money. 6 months later, we had the zoning for the property. Strange, isn't it? Step number three, criticism, resistance, bitterness. Anytime you get into a new field of medicine, you can expect to have criticism, particularly when you don't have all the data that you want yet. It was unbelievable for the first few years because of the assaults, the complaints, the problems. Many times I told Millie, we ought to get out of this field because life is too short to fight all the problems. But you know, something kept driving us on. And before long, 1974, we were being invited to go around the world and to speak for ministers of health and ministers of education in foreign countries. We had a chance even to go to Russia last year, as I mentioned. Have a chance to go to Korea, Japan, China, Australia, all over the world. And we make it a point of trying to meet with our missionaries when we go to these various countries. Remember now back at 18 years of age when I thought I was being called into the foreign mission field? I was being called. In a unique type of ministry into the foreign mission field. But without question, one of the most delightful experiences of our life occurred back in 1974. That was the summer of a very, very busy year. Extensively traveling, speaking, commitments, everything was just exploding. The organization was moving very rapidly. In the now of a clear blue sky, Billy Graham calls. He says, Dr. Cooper, I want you to go to Rio de Janeiro. And I want you to give a testimony on Sunday afternoon before the at the Maracanã Stadium in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Well, as most of us do, and I must admit that my religious associations and affiliations and my spiritual commitment at that time had dwindled because of the overwhelming rush and the problems of daily activities. You know, I just didn't really have time to be a totally committed Christian. And I said, well, call me back later. I'm just not quite sure where I'll be able to go or not. He called back later in the form of Cliff Barrows shortly after that. He said, have you made up your mind? This was about 6 weeks before. And I said, well, I just don't think I can go. Well, time went on. Things kept getting worse. My father passed away suddenly. We had to work with the will. I had to go around the world in a period of 11 days to give a series of presentations. It was just unbelievable, the requirements. And finally, 10 days before I was supposed to go to Brazil, Cliff Barrows called my office. Didn't ask me to go. He said, we're sending you a ticket. Now, that insulted me. And I'd had a list of excuses I'd already prepared to give him as to why I couldn't go. And I went down those lists, that list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Boy, I mean, they were fantastic excuses. I couldn't go to Brazil. You know, I felt at that time when I finally told him that, no, I cannot go, the most miserable existence of my life. And for about 30 minutes, that's all, I felt like I had turned my back on the Lord. And I felt like I had been slapped, crushed. I was so emotional I couldn't even speak. Trying to work with the patient. He said, Dr. Cooper, what's wrong with you? I couldn't even talk. I literally experienced hell on earth. Until I, after 30 minutes, couldn't stand it. You think the Lord isn't real? You have an experience like that. I'll tell you, the devil's real too, I can assure you. But the Lord let me know in no uncertain terms that he wanted me to go. And after 30 minutes, I called Cliff Barrows back. I don't know what's going on, but I'll be there. And you know, just as soon as I made that decision, my feelings changed from one of experiencing hell on earth to the peace and tranquility which must be associated with going to heaven. Went to Brazil. And what a marvelous opportunity that Sunday afternoon, October the 6th, 1974, to give a testimony. Let me turn the lights down, please. Through an interpreter to the largest assemblage ever on the Western Hemisphere for religious meeting. 228,000 people filed into the Maracanã Stadium that Sunday afternoon. You think the Lord will not use you if you'll turn loose, give you a chance to witness, to work, to receive the marvelous blessings that come from being a Christian. The final example before Millie speaks. Up till 74, our lives were not committed the way they should have been. Our spiritual commitment was shallow, not deep. That was a turning point in my development when I had such a close contact, such a fantastic realization of the presence of the Lord in my life. But even he didn't stop there. To the extent that, as I mentioned earlier, tremendous criticism and critiques, there was one professor of medicine from Western Reserve University that from 1968 to the present time, every time that he had a presentation to give in a medical meeting, he spent the first half tearing me apart. Oh man, it was bad. And he was just one of several people that had a particular pet peeve of jumping on Cooper in the aerobics program and all the people he had killed and all that kind of stuff. About 3 weeks ago, I had the chance to go to Atlanta to speak at the Atlanta Postgraduate Medical Assembly. And that man was there. And I was prepared on the same platform with him. I was just going to sit back and relax, just as I knew I had to. I couldn't do anything about it anyway. I gave some data that morning, presented some data that afternoon. And nary a word was said by this man in the morning or in the afternoon. At the end of the day, we're sitting in a panel together. And he said, now here's a man who wouldn't even walk down the same hall with me. He looked at me and he said, Ken, we aren't far apart anymore. I said, praise the Lord. Exactly is what I said. I said, praise the Lord. I said, would you consider being a member of our board of directors of our research institute? Here's one of the leading cardiologists in this country. And he said, Ken, I'd love to. I related that incident to Millie when I got home that night. And she reminded me of this verse that we had read in our Bible study just a few weeks before. Proverbs 16:7. When a man is trying to please God, God makes even his worst enemies to be at peace with him. It's remarkable what the Lord can do if you will turn loose and let him have control of your life. The peace, the tranquility, the physical, the spiritual fitness. I challenge you to accept it. I want to close by quoting finally and summarizing this and putting it in the proper perspective. 1 Timothy 4:8. Bodily exercise is all right, but spiritual exercise is much more important and is a tonic for all you do. So exercise yourself spiritually and practice being a better Christian, because this will help you not only now in this life, but in the next life too. Thank you very much.